your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And howdy do, boys and girls. Welcome to the wake-up call. It is July 25th. Man, oh man, I can't believe that. We are going to be talking about schools and education today, and I am thankful to my guest, although I think a couple times this weekend I mentioned a guest in the studio, and that's not true. Our guest will be by phone, but it shouldn't change the conversation just one bit, and it will still allow anyone who's interested to call up and make a call with a comment. But before I start, I want to tell a little story and give thanks to a longtime friend of mine. I want to thank Natalie Wright, who works at the Hunt Country Store. Yesterday, I stopped by the store, and I went in and got a sandwich, and I walked back to my car, and Lazarus was not there. Lazarus was not in the car. And, of course, I freaked out, and I run in the store, and there's two people working, and there's like four people in the store, and I'm like, Natalie, Lazarus isn't in the car, please. And everybody comes running out, and we're looking. And for those who don't know, Lazarus is he's blind in one eye, and he's partially deaf, except for the food hitting the bowl. And I am freaking out because that's a busy road on the weekend. And everybody's running and looking and screaming. And Natalie goes, Rick, are you sure you had Lazarus with you? And I did not. When I pulled over, I had gone home from my early morning run, and I'd taken him home before going back out again and then stopping by on the way back home. So although 95 times out of 100 when I stop there to get something, Lazarus is with me, he was not. And a big shout out. Thanks to Natalie Wright for easing the stress on me by asking the sensible question. So for all who care, Lazarus is fine. In fact, he's probably home munching on some snacks that he shouldn't be having right now. All right. So today's topic, is we're going to be talking about state education. And let's, see if my guest is there. Hello. Hey, thank you so much. This is, Kathy, and Kathy's going to talk with us today. We are going to keep the area in which she teaches, we're just not going to mention that because we are concerned about having an open and free conversation. And as many people know, that the state and the administrations can sometimes give a little negative feedback. So, Kathy, thank you for participating.
All right.
And Kathy, how long have you been a teacher?
Well, I've been teaching in the public schools for 15 years. I did have one year of experience in a preschool private setting before getting hired on with the public schools.
And you're in an urban school setting, correct?
Yes, urban in a mostly African-American setting with a poverty level that fluctuates between 70% and 80%. So about 70% and 80% of our students are on free or reduced lunch.
But you, with kids in your family, you live in a suburban setting, and so your kids go to a suburban school, correct?
Yes, the school that my son attends is predominantly white, with a poverty level of, I think it fluctuates between 5% and 10% per year.
So quite different between where you work and the school system in which you live.
Yes, quite different is putting it mildly. It is eons apart from each other.
All right. So we are going to talk about state education. Kathy, having, as she mentioned, 15 years in the school setting from which she teaches, and a child who attends a much different school setting as well. We are going to be talking about state education in a variety of ways, If you have a question or a comment that you'd like to make, Sean McCord here today to help. I think we will probably, because our guest is by phone, you're welcome to call up and give Sean your question or your comment to pass along. All right, Kathy, let's start with to me, what seems to be one of the basic questions, which is the importance of parents, especially if your school system that you teach in, when you talk about poverty level, do you have any numbers on the single parent setting for that, which to me seems like that would make it much more difficult to be an active participating parent. Is that a fair thought?
Yes, and, you know, single parent can be the waters of that can be really muddy because you can have a single parent who has a boyfriend living in the setting, which is also helping, you know, quote unquote, raise the child. But for the most part, 95% of the children that we're seeing are coming from the traditional single parent household where, you know, one parent has custody. There might be, you know, a significant other coming in and out of that child's life, but they're being raised by one custodial parent.
And how do you find that to be a positive or negative influence? I would assume, just based on my simple thoughts on it, that single parents in a poverty level, which I would guess would require them to work maybe two jobs or certainly maybe the non-standard hours of a job,
Right, and really time is the big barrier. Most, you know, and again, we're sort of pigeonholing everyone, but for the most part, single parents don't have the time to, you know, that they wish that they had to come in and meet with the teacher. Like you said, they're working two jobs. They're tired. The child's going to daycare or some sort of sitter, and maybe they're in a setting where homework is not a priority, or the child is just, you know, if they're going to daycare at 6 in the morning and getting picked up at 6:30, they're tired. And then they come home, you know, they might get fed a meal. You know, some kids are being asked to be caregivers to younger children. So tired is really a problem with the parent and the child, and the parent isn't able to parent. They're not even present to parent, really. So time is a big problem. And then also I have found that the single parent coming from the setting of where poverty is a real issue, they don't want to be the one to say, well, let's sit down and do the homework. They don't have a lot of time in their kid's life, and so the time that they do have, they want to spend it doing fun stuff. You know, let's go to the store, or let's walk over here to the neighbors, or let's sit outside and you play, and I'm going to visit and talk with some friends, because, you know, they have very little free time to really be interacting with their kids. Again, that's what I have found.
You know, if the poverty level is 80 to 90%, are those the numbers that you gave me?
Yes.
Is that the same in what you find with the parenting issues of the tired kids in your classroom? Now, you teach elementary school, and I should have mentioned that earlier, right? Kindergarten,
right,
and first grade?
Yes.
Do you find that to be similar with the parenting of the kids in your classroom, that 80 to 90% of the kids are tired, but the other 10 to 20% are not, that the 80 to 90% of the parents are unable to participate actively, but the other 10 to 20% are?
Yes, and I think the piece that we sometimes forget as teachers and adults who are sort of on the outside looking in at a situation that we're not familiar with is that parents send us the best kids they know how to send us. They are parenting the best way they know how. I don't think anybody sets out to say, you know what, I'm not really going to care about my child's education. But if you're brought up in a situation where education wasn't really a priority in your own bringing up, then education isn't really a priority when you're dealing with your own kids. And that's neither good nor bad, really. I mean, as a teacher, I certainly have an opinion on that. But if you don't know that reading to your child and doing homework and providing them a quiet space and time where that expectation should be happening daily, then and you don't know that that's important, then how we can't expect you to do that with your own children. You don't know that that's important. So, I'm hesitant to say that maybe they don't. I hate to say that they don't think education is important. I think education was never a priority, and they don't know how to help their children do better in school than possibly they did themselves.
11:13 here on the Wake Up Call, talking with Kathy, 15 year. Does that make it sound like 15-year-old? 15 years worth of teaching in the state of Virginia in an urban setting. Dial us up if you have a question or a comment, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS is the toll-free number. And let me give a shout-out to the folks in Lovingston listening on 94.7, and a thank you to Sugarsnap for their support. They are offering gently used baby and kids items, including hats, shoes, plus maternity and nursing clothes. Also at Sugarsnap, you'll find cloth diapers, nursery gear, and some locally made items. And a kid-friendly play area is available while you shop. You can become a fan of Sugarsnap on Facebook or Twitter. And more is available at sugarsnapconsignment.com, or go visit the store in Shoppers World near Whole Foods. All right, back talking with Kathy about state education, a teacher of 15 years in the state. Oh, Kathy, we're talking about parents and whether or not the parents have the background in terms of parenting and how much time and energy to devote to teaching. What about the kids arriving? You have them for kindergarten and first grade. What about arriving, knowing letters and numbers and how to read? What do you see in that and how it affects the future work of the students and it affects your job?
Well, in the district where I am, and in most hot population districts, you know, there is a, and I use mandatory loosely, but a mandatory four-year-old preschool state-funded program, which is based on need. So what they do is they, they flood the city with letters in the spring that say if you have a child that is eligible, you know, meets this age criteria and will be four by, September 30th, come them in, let's screen them. And they screen them, and then they rank them by the most needy, the child showing the least amount of school readiness gets slot one, and then the child who knows a little bit more but still isn't school ready gets slot two. And they fill up these four-year-old preschool programs with children who really need to be in a school setting because for whatever reason, either background or family funding, whatever it is, why your child isn't school ready, they provide a four-year-old program for them to go. Because as many parents out there who have kids in school know, the state and the nation is really good with the trickle-down effect, which means, you know, things that you used to have to know in third grade, you now have to know in second grade, and things you need to know in second grade have trickled down to first grade and so forth. And so kindergarten is no longer the let me learn my colors, shapes, and numbers. If you're not reading when you leave kindergarten, you are a step behind the average child. So our urban school settings are getting really good at targeting children who need to be in a preschool setting so that they are not behind when they come into kindergarten. So most of the kids that I see that come into kindergarten are educationally ready. They know their numbers, they know their letters, they know that letters make sounds, they know, how to sit and listen to a story. What they're lacking is the social piece. The how do I get along with other children so that I can learn in a classroom setting. That is the piece that we're now finding that kids aren't ready for. And kids learn that by, you know, one, being in a social setting, but not a structured social setting, which is what we're now providing them. You know, everybody stand in a line, sit in your seat, here's your red crayon, here's your red crayon. You know, it used to be when you sent your kids to preschool, they did a whole lot more playing, and they learned how to get along through play. And because we're expecting kids to know so much, you know, if you can't provide your kids with a social situation to learn those skills in, they're behind in that aspect. So we have kids who know what they need to know in kindergarten. They don't know how to get along with each other. That's the piece that we now have to figure out how to fill that gap.
We are talking about state education with a teacher of 15 years in an urban setting. And by the way, for folks listening today, in 2 weeks on August 8th, we have scheduled Pam Moran and Rosa Atkins, the superintendents of Charlottesville and Albemarle County, to be on the air together. So we'll see it from a little more local setting and from a different viewpoint about state education. So tune in with us again in two Sundays, 11:18 here on the Wake Up Call with Kathy. Kathy, we're talking about, you mentioned that for this earlier program, the nursery school, the preschool, you said mandatory loosely. Well, why did you say that? And what is the state supposed to do to provide the kids who come to kindergarten ready to go?
Well, you know, Governor Kane had, one of his initiatives was that, you know, that there was going to be mandatory four-year-old programs, that every four-year-old was going to be in some sort of school setting. That would either be a public funded setting. It could be, you know, if you could prove that you were sending your child to, you know, the preschool that your church provides, you know, a daycare sort of preschool setting, but that kids needed to be in school at four in order to be ready for school in kindergarten. But that's really a double-edged sword, and there are two sort of camps out there. One camp saying, yes, 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 four-year-olds need to be in school, they're coming to school and they're not ready. There's the other camp that's saying, well, if we're going to send four-year-olds to school, then at some point we're going to be saying that our three-year-olds aren't ready to be in school, and now we need to get them ready because they're not ready for the four-year-old program. And where does that cycle stop? And the camp that's saying, you know, at some point we have to say they've never been in school, we need to get them ready, and that's our job. Those folks are saying, you know, we're not allowing our kids to be kids anymore. We are, you know, we're putting them in daycares at two. They're in an institutional setting from 2 until 18, and then some, you know, for 4+ more years. And we're dumping kids out into society who don't know how to do anything on their own. They've been told how to do it and what to do it from the time that they could really speak. And so I don't really know what's right. I think, in my opinion, the state needs to ease up a little bit on saying, you know, you need to be at this point by this time. Your child by the age of, you know, 8 needs to be doing these things or they are, quote unquote, unsuccessful in school. I think that's a big problem with what we're seeing, because kids are, everyone's different, everyone learns at a different rate, and we're not taking that into you know, the logic of your kid is now unsuccessful. But then again, you have to have some sort of benchmark in order to say, okay, you're not learning at the rate that you need to be learning. And you know, we all know that kids make it through school who can't read. We graduate kids who haven't learned what they need to learn. So there has to be some kind of balance, and I certainly don't have enough of the research and the background to say what that needs to be. But my experience is that in the past and right now, we still haven't quite got it right down to where it needs to be. There are still big gaps and holes in the system that we have now in public education.
This is the Sunday morning wake-up call, and we're talking with Kathy, who, a teacher of 15 years in the state of Virginia. And let me give you the weather. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Listen up. Heat advisory until 8 p.m. today. Sunny and hot. 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms after 3 o'clock today. 93 to 98. Richmond, 100 to 105 with a 107 heat index in Richmond and Lynchburg. Mostly cloudy tonight. 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Lows 70 to 75. A little cooler in the valley. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny, highs in the mid-80s, 40% chance of showers in Lynchburg. Right now, it is sunny and bright, 89 in the valley, 89 in Lynchburg, 93 in Richmond, 91 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let me give a thanks to Blue Ridge Mountain Sports. The summer heat is on, and Blue Ridge is fully stocked with a selection of kayaks and canoes for the perfect getaway. You'll find canoes by Mad River, plus all styles of kayaks from Wilderness Systems. Also at Blue Ridge, it's stand-up paddle boats for the lake, river, or ocean. That's Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Barracks Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville, and on West Broad and the Chesterfield Town Center in Richmond. Online, BRMS.com. And we also want to thank you for listening to Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. While you're enjoying the show, please remember why we're able to bring it to you. It's only because of our underwriters, as well as individual contributions from people like Irene Burlock, Barbara Norton, and Brenda Clement Jones with Bill Jones. So stay tuned and tell a friend about Acoustic Sunrise and other shows that you enjoy here on WNRN. All right, back in action with our guest, Kathy. Hey, Kathy, we were talking about parents, but for state education, I want to chat for a minute about the difference between the urban school system where you teach and the suburban school system where your family lives, because I would think that with not just yourself, but having so many colleagues doing, you know, being able to give you thoughts and ideas and comments about both style of setting. How do you, you know, what are the, are there any negatives with having your child go to a suburban school setting that you, you know, you mentioned has almost a very, very low poverty level, et cetera?
Well, I think the biggest drawback is that there's no diversity. In order for him to have any sort of diversity and experience that not everyone looks like he does, not everyone eats the same foods that he does, the music is different, you know, that I have to make sure that I provide those experiences for him. But then again, you know, there is the flip side of that, which is that the students that I teach, everyone in the classroom looks like them. Everyone in the classroom has the same, you know, for the most part, the same experiences that they've had. And so they don't see the other side of the coin either. But I find that that's lacking for my son. And I think that's where some districts are going when they are moving more towards magnet programs, schools of choice, so that parents can say, okay, my child is leaning towards being gifted in the arts, you know. So we're going to sign up for the arts magnet school and hope that lots of different parents are also doing the same thing, and so that there is a much, instead of kids all being from the same neighborhood, that these are kids from all across the city that are going to one school that have a similar interest, and so that diversity happens naturally and so that it's not forced. In my district, we are still under the federal mandate of busing.
Are you serious?
The communities are still not integrated.
Busing? I thought that was from 1960 and 70.
Well, we are still, my district is still under a federal mandate because it has not, the community has not integrated itself naturally. And so we still bus.
We're talking with Kathy about state education from the teacher's viewpoint, an urban teacher of 15 years. Busing. I'm having a hard time getting my head around that. And even magnet school, and please don't call up and harass me about this. It's just how the school system that I went to. If you put the magnet school, what I gathered from that was to diversify the school, you put the magnet school in one district. So that if the parent chooses that their child is gifted, that they send them to the magnet school.
It has nothing to do with gifted or intelligence. It is all about how you think your child learns best. So let's say that there's a district out there that has three magnet schools. It'll have arts magnet for, the languages and the dramatic arts. And then it'll have another magnet school for, let's say, math and technology, and it will have a third magnet school for the environmental sciences. And so the parent now has, theoretically, four choices. They can send their child to their zoned school, which means the school that, because of the address of where I live, this is where my child is going. Or they can choose from one of the three magnet schools. So if I'm looking at my son, I need to take into consideration, okay, do I want him going to my zoned school where I live? Does he learn better through math, science, technology? Does he learn better through the environmental sciences? Or do I think he really has an interest in the arts, the dramatic arts? So that there is some choice. And the push behind that is that by offering choice, people will naturally integrate themselves instead of being told, well, I'm sorry, you live at this address, but because everyone looks the same in that area, your child is now going to be put on a bus and bus 30 minutes up the road, and some of those kids that live up the road are going to be bused 30 minutes down the road so that they're integrated because the communities aren't naturally integrated.
How does a parent decide at kindergarten and first grade whether their child learns best through math or dramatic arts?
Well, I think at that young of an age, it's really what the parent is looking for. They might go and visit all the schools, and it's really the decision that you're making for your child. Okay, I like the way this school feels to me when I come in it. I like the way the kids are learning, and so this is where I'm going to send my child. And then, as a parent, you have to do that when they're young. You have to make those choices for them. As they get older, of course, they can start voicing their own opinions on how they would like their learning to look.
And the state is providing all of this? Because I would think that, I know that in some schools, including here in the Charlottesville-Albemarle area, is that some of these music, arts, languages, aside from Spanish and French, but some alternative languages they're being taught, are being removed as options because of financial needs?
Well, these are schools that someone, I don't know who that someone is, but someone has said, we're going to base our curriculum around this theme. You're still teaching the state mandated standards, but you are teaching them through a certain theme. So let's take the dramatic arts. So you've got a dramatic arts magnet school, and in third grade you have to learn about the Greek and the Roman societies. So you can teach Greek and Roman societies by having your kids read Greek and Roman plays, maybe have them write their own Greek and Roman play, and then have them perform a Greek or Roman play. And so there, you're still teaching the standard of Greek and Roman societies and mythology, but you are doing it in a way that is how those kids have decided they want to learn it. It's a strong point for them. They want to learn through the arts. Now, that's not to say that, any other school that's not a magnet can't do it that way, but that is how the school has decided to do it. Now, to go back to the budget cuts and you know, people, languages being dropped, that is due to the lack of money in the state budget, and the magnet program, all of that is taught through just your Joe Schmo regular classroom teacher. They're not going to have any special endorsement in dramatic arts or that kind of thing. That they're just going to be doing what they can do with the background that they have. The budget cuts are what's affecting the drop of the German and the Latin and all that in our schools.
We are talking with Kathy about state education from the teacher's viewpoint. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks. If you're listening today from the wonderfully air-conditioned home or car, dial us up, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks. And I see the phone line going right there. Kathy, you're talking about the magnet school. And just that, we'll come back to the overall topic later of SOLs. How does the fourth grader pass an SOL test if the majority of their required topics have been taught through dramatic arts and music?
Well, I mean, because we all learn differently. I mean, nope. And again, this is my opinion, but a child, learning should be fun. And so just because the material might be presented at the end of the year on a multiple choice SOL test, you still, as the third or fourth grade teacher, are held to teaching the standards that the state says you have to teach. But you're hoping that they're learning it in a fun way, and I believe that when you learn something in a way that's more meaningful and authentic, you certainly are going to remember it far longer and better than you might because somebody, you know, made you play Jeopardy with it and you're trying to learn a bunch of trivia, which is really what teaching has boiled down to in the past few years, because we're being, you know, schools are being sanctioned because their kids aren't passing the SOLs. There comes a level of trust with the teacher in saying, okay, I'm going to trust that you're going to teach the standards that have to be taught, but in a way that is meaningful and authentic and to the student. And that's where these, you know, I don't want to say I'm this big proponent for magnet schools, but I think it's one way to help kids learn material that might otherwise be, you know, the kids sitting in the classroom going, well, why is this important? Why do I have to know who Zeus is and what Zeus did and who really cares? This isn't important to my life. But if you read about Zeus and you write about Zeus and then you act out about Zeus, well, then maybe it doesn't really matter why it's important that you had to learn about Zeus. You've just learned about him, and now when the question comes up on the SOL about Zeus or Greek society and how democracy is based on that, you can actually answer that question because you've been, had your hands dirty with it for 9 weeks, if that makes sense.
Everything makes sense to me because I read the Rick Riordan books about Percy and the Olympians. 11:36 here on the Wake Up Calls. We're talking with Kathy, who's been a teacher of 15 years in the state of Virginia. We're talking about state education. From the teacher's viewpoint, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks. Questions and comments. Let me thank Blue Ridge Graphics for support today programming here on WNRN. You can find Blue Ridge Graphics on Meade Avenue at East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom t-shirts and sportswear and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and at brgtshirts.com. All right, back with Kathy. Kathy, you talk about magnet schools and how you think they're the way to go. How are they being viewed by the state leaders, both whether that's governor or whether that's the state leaders of the academics here in Virginia?
Well, magnet schools and charter schools are two completely different things. Magnet schools are state-funded, state-run, under the umbrella of whatever the school district is. Charter schools, which are, I'm not an expert in this area, but charter schools, as I understand them, are schools that are started up by, and I use anyone loosely, but anyone who says, hey, I want to start a school, if they can produce the curriculum and find the funding and then be, given the seal of approval by the district, then you can have a charter school. Virginia, in the past, has not been a proponent of charter schools. But our new governor, from what I'm reading, has appointed his Secretary of Education, has a lot of charter school background. And so what I'm hearing is that the state is going to loosen its grip on its stand on charter schools and possibly allow more. There are a few, I think there are, and don't quote me on this, but I think there are three or four charter schools in the entire state of Virginia, two of them being in Northern Virginia, one being in the Tidewater area, but it is not a true charter school because it is under the umbrella of its district. It does not stand alone. It receives its funding from the district that it's located in. And then I think there's one more, and I don't know where it is. It could very well be in the Charlottesville, Albemarle area. I don't know. But if you ask most public school teachers, they are probably going to sort of lean away a little bit from charter schools because some people can view them as sort of, the Wild West of education. But I really think that as a nation, we're going to find ourselves moving in that direction, and again, this is my opinion, but because we are not doing a good job of educating our kids, and the money isn't there. And the one thing about charter schools is that they can be privately funded. And let's say Bill Gates decides he wants to throw a whole bunch of money in your charter school. There are charter schools in this country that are doing a phenomenal job of educating kids that we typically label as unteachable. And as a teacher, that shouldn't be coming out of my mouth, but people say, that kid can't learn because of X, Y, and Z. And they're doing a phenomenal job of teaching kids that are traditionally coming from situations that make it very hard for them to learn. And so I think that's going to be the trend that this nation heads towards, and Virginia is real slow in moving towards those trends, but I think we're going to see it.
11:41 here in the wake-up call, talking about state education from the teacher's viewpoint, and again in 2 weeks, the schedule is to have both the Charlottesville and Albemarle County school superintendents on the program together. 11:41 on the wake-up call.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, this week, meet the man who saved Charlottesville's ice park. A local businessman has big plans to rescue the building and save the fun. What happened to the Bel Rio restaurant and its owner? Not sure, but it's not so wild over there anymore. And a local blogger goes national. The Hook. Why wouldn't your mother approve? And let's thank Sarasan Tile, an imaginative full-service design and consulting firm that offers a wide variety of original, eco-friendly materials for your project. You can visit the Sarasan Showroom in Berkmar Crossing Shopping Center in Charlottesville. Sarasan Tile can turn your dreams into reality. More info and exact directions are at sarisandtile.com. You can friend them, too, on Facebook or follow them on Twitter. That's Sarasan Tile. And I know you wouldn't go anywhere, because at noon, Drew Thompson will be here at Les Temps Perdus, the best of 80s and 90s alternative bands like The Replacements, Psychedelic Furs, and The Smiths, brought to you in part by Orzo and The Visualite. Requests always welcome on Les Temps Perdus. All right, back with Kathy as we take our last break. I see we got the phone ringing again, 979-0919, ringing up and 1-877-WNRN Rocks. Kathy, are you with me?
Yes.
I have a very long comment that Sean McCord wrote down, so bear with me.
Okay.
Beth from Louisa County wants to say that play is a developmental activity that allows kids to master fine motor and social skills and should be part of the school curriculum. Also, local governments should look at local resources as tools to help parents raise children. Example, senior citizens spend time reading to small children. It takes a village to raise a child.
Yes, and I completely agree with Beth. And one thing that she touched on about the dramatic play and that helping develop social and academic skills. And unfortunately, that is the piece that when you let's say you're looking at the kindergarten curriculum and you're saying, okay, these kids need to be able to read by the time they leave kindergarten, what's the piece we can take out because we've got to teach reading for more time? And the piece that inevitably gets taken out is the centers, the sand and the blocks and the water, which as primary educators and most parents know that is where most of the learning happens. And yet that is the first place non-educators and budget folks and maybe, your people up in admin, administration who are looking for places to put more learning time in, they don't see it as a valuable learning tool. And I know for a fact that in the Tidewater area, the district where I teach, we are one of the few districts that still have, our centers, our housekeeping centers where kindergartners go and, they can play with the pretend stove and the pretend sink and there's a sand table. Most other districts, when you talk to other kindergarten teachers, they say, oh, no, they came and took all of those things out of our room 3 and 4 years ago because, we're teaching reading. We added 45 more minutes of reading instruction into our day, and that's the that gets taken out. And Beth is exactly right. That is where a significant amount of learning takes place. How do I share? How do I take my turn? How do I get along with someone who, has a more forceful personality than I do? Those are all things that employers are looking for when they hire you to go into the workplace. And that is what our kids don't know how to do. They don't know how to be team players anymore. Everybody has to be first. Everybody has to be the leader. My idea has to be the idea that's chosen, and that's what employers are saying they need.
Well, Kathy, let me ask you, because the thing that comes to my mind when you say that, is it truly the school administration saying that and taking that away, or is that the school or state administration responding to what the parents now want? It's easy to sit there and say, oh, well, we need to devote 15 or 45 minutes more to reading. But isn't that the parent saying, these are my expectations of my children. My children needs to be first. My child needs to be able to do this faster and better and sooner than I was or than everyone else is. You see that we keep talking about play, but you see that in Little League, where the parent sits out there and screams and yells at the coach and at the umpire, et cetera. Is this the county or city administration from the superintendent down, or is this the parent telling the administration, this is what I want, now do it?
Well, I think the answer to that is yes and no. I think yes, parents are very vocal and know what they want for their kids and know the right buttons to push on a person for that, for those things to happen. And usually your most vocal parent who knows what they want for their child is the parent who has already provided a lot of those experiences for their child anyway. I worry about the parents who, don't come into the schools, don't contact their teacher, don't contact their superintendent, aren't vocal about what they want for their child's education for many reasons. Maybe they don't know how. Maybe they can't vocalize it. Maybe they don't know what's important for their child. Those are the parents whose kids need the socialization of the dramatic play and the sand table and the water table. And the kids whose parents are saying, no, my kid needs 45 more minutes of reading instruction, are the ones who their kids have already might have had those experiences because they might have gone out and bought those kinds of things for them, or they have play dates, or they've set up social situations for their kids to do that. And it's not to say every child who's coming from a background like that doesn't need more of that, because I have also found that a lot of those kids with parents who are very forceful and know what they want for their children, those kids don't know how to think for themselves because all the thinking's been done for them. They've been told where to go, what to do, you know, all their problems have been solved for them. So I think it's yes, the district is making those decisions because that's what they're hearing, but then when I say no, I think the district really listens to test scores and are we making the standards and are we getting our federal money based on whether we're meeting, you know, the No Child Left Behind legislation. Are we making adequate yearly progress? And if the answer to that is no in some of your schools, then a lot of educators who are in positions higher than myself are going to say, well, then we need to teach them more. We need to teach them more. We need to teach them faster. We need to teach them better. And sometimes that doesn't mean we need to be in front of them as a teacher, blah, 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 all the time. A lot of learning can happen in a situation that might not look like learning to someone who just pokes their head into the classroom. But that could be another whole hour conversation, because there are, again, two camps on that. And most people who are in administrative decision-making positions don't come from the elementary setting, which I find really, really surprising. But they are typically middle and high school educators who have gone on to get their leadership and their doctorate endorsements, and they don't really understand how the small child learns.
11:50 here on the Wake Up Call. We are talking with Kathy, who's a teacher of 15 years in an urban setting, and we're getting the teacher's viewpoint on state education. Kathy, tell me a little bit about what you must do as a teacher to improve your skills. And I ask that in a two-part way. What do you think you need to do as to fit your own needs based on your strengths and weaknesses and how culture has changed, but also what is the state requiring you to do that you think is good and time wasteful?
Well, the state requires that every 5 years a teacher gets recertified, and that just means that anyone who does not have their master's in teaching has to take a graduate level class, and then they also have to acquire 90 hours of professional development. And you can get that through, you know, going to conferences, attending workshops, that kind of thing. If you already have your master's in teaching, then the state says, well, you need just 90 hours of professional development. So that is what the state says. And if you do that, you have 5 years to do that in. You have 5 years, every 5 years you have to get recertified, and they, you know, they update your teaching certificate. But just as, you know, what every teacher needs to do to be a good teacher, I think there are a couple of things. And on a personal note, for me, one of the most effective things that has been for me to do is to have a student teacher. A teacher that is in college trying to get their teaching degree has to do a certain amount of hours in an actual classroom. And when you have a student teacher in your classroom who is asking you why you do what you do every time you do it, it really forces you to stop and say, why am I doing that? You really have to reflect on why you make the choices that you do every day in the classroom, and it helps you articulate why you do what you do as a teacher. And for me, the first time I had a student teacher, I ended up stopping doing a lot of stuff that I was doing that was really not purposeful. And I wasn't even really conscious of the fact that it wasn't purposeful.
Give me an example.
I think a student teacher helps a teacher really grow in their own craft and profession.
Give me an example of what you're talking about, stopping what you're doing because it wasn't purposeful.
Well, when you think about, let's say you're doing, you're working on a blend, TH blend. You know, TH says F. So I had, and this was an activity that I had passed out for the kids, and I was working with a reading group, and I had these boys and girls, and they were supposed to be coloring all the pictures that started with TH. And I remember, it was a male, I remember him coming up to me saying, well, what if they color the wrong thing? What do you want me to do? And I thought, you know, I'm thinking to myself, that's not the point. The point is that these boys and girls are supposed to be busy and quiet so that I can be working with this reading group over here. But it made me stop and think, yeah, this is not a purposeful activity. This is really just busy work so that I can work with this reading group. And my response to him was, well, I think his name was Jonathan. Well, Jonathan, I don't really know because I haven't ever had to deal with that. I would collect all that and I would look at it and then I would turn it back and I would circle what wasn't right. But what he got me to thinking was I'm actually having some of these kids practice the wrong thing. You know, this isn't really practice, this is busy work. And so together we came up with a completely different activity that those kids would be doing instead of coloring this, that, and the other. You know, he put all this stuff in a bag and he was pulling out objects, you know, which we were able to do because there were two adults in the room. But he made me stop and I had to start questioning myself. Just because I have these six kids over here at this reading group that I'm working with, I need to have something that these other 18 are doing that is meaningful and purposeful and not just something that's keeping them in their seats and quiet. So that's what I mean by making me stop and really think about what's happening in the room. Because, you know, for me, the point was I need to read with these five kids for 10 minutes while these others are busy. I wasn't really thinking about these others and what they were doing as what was happening with their learning. So that's what I mean by making me stop and think and reflect on what was happening in the room.
11:56 here in the Wake Up Call as we talk with Kathy. She's a teacher of 15 years in an urban setting, giving us a teacher viewpoint on state education. Drew Thompson's here in the room, so you know that we're near the end of the hour where Les Temps-Perdue is up next. But let me give a thanks to Ben Around Tattoos for supporting us today. You can find Ben Around Tattoos in downtown Waynesboro. They feature male and female tattoo artists, and they have thousands of designs available and can create work from a design you provide. Ben Around Tattoos is in downtown Waynesboro here in Charlottesville at 701 West Main Street. For more information, it's Ben Around Tattoos. And by the way, this is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar, Amherst, Lynchburg. Kathy, 11:56, just a few minutes left. Tell me, I think we all recognize that funding is not going up incredibly anytime soon. What are some things that you would like the state education system to change to make what you feel would be more productivity for the elementary school kids tomorrow?
Well, I think we're making a big mistake when we are we're changing the student to teacher ratio. The state has said that we're going to allow up to, I think the number's 27 kids in our third through fifth grade, and I'm sure it's even more than that in the upper grades. They're keeping it at 22 or 23 in K through two. But I think that's a big mistake. I think less students in a classroom, the better. And I think, you know, we spend all this money on having all, I think we're too top heavy. We have too many administrators, not enough worker bees.
Easy to say from a worker bee.
Yes.
And where does the, and so that's where the money comes from? You trim that area?
I think so. I think we're really good. I think we waste so much money. You know, really, public school is a government entity, and we all know that government is really good at wasting so much money. I mean, I just look at the little things that we do that it's so wasteful. You know, people might not know this, but when your child goes into the cafeteria, they buy a lunch and they go into the cafeteria, whether it's free or reduced lunch, whether they want the food or not that is being served, they have to receive a protein, a vegetable, and a fruit, and a dairy. So let's say, you know, my kid goes in, they want the hot dog and they want the broccoli, but they don't want the banana and they don't want the milk. They still have to take it. They still are, that is still placed on their tray. That is so wasteful to me. We're throwing away a perfectly good banana and a perfectly good carton of milk that the child has already said they don't want. Now, I'm all for kids need to be presented with healthy choices, and, you know, they might not want the milk, but they need to drink the milk because it's good for them. But we also have to come to a point where, okay, you don't want it, then you're not going to get it. And if you want, and if you wanted it and you didn't get it and you said you didn't want it, then you'll remember that the next time you go through the line. We just waste. People would be amazed at how much food is wasted and how much paper products a school system goes through. They put a breakfast in a brown paper bag for every child that comes through. Why are we doing that? Why are we putting foods on plastic trays instead of on the trays that have to be washed? That is where money is being thrown away that doesn't need to be thrown away, in my opinion.
All right.
That's one area where funds are being wasted.
I've been highly entertained and informed for the hour. Will you come on again sometime?
Sure.
All right. Kathy, a teacher of 15 years in an urban school setting, thank you so much.
Yes, and again, to all those hardworking teachers out there, keep it up.
Thanks. All right. Drew Thompson up next with Les Temps-Perdue. And again, for those interested in the teacher conversation, we will have the city and county superintendents on in 2 weeks. Adios.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday, and by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The wake-up call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.